when you have new paradigms, you require new highways. And like the biggest highway we don't talk about is the Apple ecosystem, right? ChatGPT is really went that fast because of the internet and then the Apple ecosystem, right?
Yes.
And it is plausible that Sam or somebody's going to build a really cool, different phone device and a whole different ecosystem that is going to allow for a whole major superhighway of new products that would not be possible to be distributed without that happening. And I think that is the most likely outcome.
Welcome back for part two of Unsolicited Feedback's episode with Kip Bodnar, the Chief Marketing Officer at HubSpot. Here in part two of our conversation, we dive into a bunch of different topics around marketing technology, about the landscape, about different tools, and then do a deep dive on video creation AI tools like Agent. And we talk about the impact that they have for marketers. We'll dive right into this week's episode. Thanks so much for listening.
All right, we're back. Joff, you want to dive right in?
I do. Kip, I have a question for you because this has been on my mind for a while. So in my new role as venture capitalist, I'm seeing more and more companies come in and they have the new AI sales and marketing tool. And every time I take one of these pitches, I'm reminded of your friend Scott Brinker over at HubSpot. I think he's a VP of platform.
Yep.
So he, as he produces every year, I think, this amazing marketecture picture of the companies and tools that are serving the sales and marketing space. And on it, it's this crazy list of logos. And the most recent one, as of 2023, by his take, there's over 11,000 tools in the sales and marketing space. And that grew just from last year, I think it was 9,900. And if you look over the last 12 years, that's 7,000% growth and the number of tools, companies that are serving sales and marketing. So I was confused as to how to think about that space over there. And of course, there's these central tools like HubSpot and Salesforce, which become the system of record. And you got a lot of people trying to hang off of that. But what's going on? What's your take on that? I want to hear from someone that's been, because you've lived through all of
it. I have lived through all of it. I remember when that chart was like a couple hundred companies.
Just to be clear, when it was a couple hundred companies, I think my take at the time was, this is obviously a problem. There's way too many tools chasing marketing technology. Yeah. And it's now we're at, what did you say, 11,000?
Over 11,000. Yeah, that would have been the time to be an investor, like for sure in that space.
Maybe it still is when maybe we don't know if the architecture, is that what you call it? We'll have 100,000 companies on it in a couple of years.
I mean, look, will it have 100,000 companies on it someday? Probably. But the economics of those companies, I think, are going to be very different. And so if you're going to break down this space, you're always going to have core platforms. And anybody entering this space that's going to be greater than $1 billion in revenue is going to have to either be a core platform or going to have to be a major player in a major use case, like website content management, right? If you have a couple percent of that market, like you are a $1 billion revenue business, but that's a really hard market and it's going to take you a decade to grind that out and make all that happen. Right. Even like email marketing, you saw Klaviyo be able to go public because of their focus on the e-commerce vertical. That's awesome. The reality is most of these companies are going to run up against kind of what I'd call hard and fast rules of the market. Right. I've probably seen about 12 really interesting AI prospecting startups, right? Where it's like, hey, we're going to do your 12? Automated email. I should have said the last 2 weeks, but yes, I've seen a lot. But it's cool. It's cool. Do I believe you can probably do some cool lead identification and email? I do. I think you're probably pretty smart. You can do that. You know what? You can't get around Google's spam guidelines in Gmail. You can't. You're not going to be like world-class experts in deliverability. How are you going to buy the contact data? How are the economics of all this going to work? Maybe one of them will break out. But what's most likely is, like, I saw the first generation of these companies, Yesware and a lot of companies, and they all went sideways because it's hard to run a standalone business in specific categories that have kind of market dynamics that make it very challenging.
Yeah.
What's interesting is I think AI will allow for a lot of really great companies that are just not venture companies, right?
Yeah.
Like event management software is a horrible market, and partially because it's so specialized. And there will be somebody who's, you know what? I have a great SaaS business for running like enterprise sub 20 person dinners. And I'm going to have 10 people and I'm going to make $20, $30 million a year in like net new ARR. And that's going to be great. But I'm never going to be a $100 million run rate business, right? Because I'm solving this very specific important problem, but it's just not that big. It's not that interesting. And so I think that's what's going to happen is you're going to have more companies, but those companies are going to get smaller. Like one of my beliefs of the future is that the future is more smaller companies, not fewer bigger companies. As you get AI and automation at scale, you just have the opportunity to address problems that were too small or too expensive before.
Right.
Yeah, I mostly agree with that.
Do you? Yeah. You think we'll have more companies or fewer companies with AI? Just riff on that.
Okay, so I have an extreme view. Extreme view, which I think is far enough out that it's not super relevant, but is the super long tail view, is that if software becomes really easy to build, there's no need for SaaS. And the reason for that is I will hire someone to build exactly the stack that exactly my company wants to solve exactly the problems I need, and custom software is cheap. That's one like crazy worldview. Imagine these like Devin type tools become really good. Why would I buy HubSpot and then try to figure out how to fit my lead funnel into their standard like forms and things like that if I could just build exactly what works for my swimming lesson business? You know what I mean?
It's not just HubSpot, but there are a lot of pipes that are hard, right? So you could say that you have some SaaS platforms that are literally just pipes and APIs, and there's just custom software built on all of it. I generally agree with what you're saying. Like my whole take on this is that the second generation of the internet commoditized content, right? Commoditized the ability to create, interact with information. The third generation of the internet commoditizes code, right? It is going to bring the cost of code to near zero, where we'll have disposable web applications. Right. We'll be able to do a lot of things that we aren't able to do today. And there are a lot of higher order consequences to that. The one you bring up is a possibility. I don't think it's a tomorrow possibility, but it's at maybe some point in the future possibility.
Okay, so that's the extreme view. Yep. The other view is the addressable market of valuable businesses that can be built becomes much larger because the cost to create goes down.
I agree with this.
And so what that means is my car's at the shop right now.
Yeah.
This shop actually has a decent software platform. I don't know who powers it for appointments, scheduling, et cetera. Probably not a venture scale business is my best bet.
Yeah.
Probably was a pain to build, hard to go to market, hard to sell. So maybe with some AI type tools for marketing, lead generation, using HubSpot to get my inbound going well, I could sell this product with two or three engineers, or maybe even fewer than that, to every shop in the Bay Area. Like suddenly a market for software wouldn't necessarily be, oh, I have to go online, right? Yeah, I could build the perfect BMW and Audi software shop with all the right custom data and understanding of what could go wrong with your car that also does scheduling and appointments. And it's unique to this 500 locations. And all of a sudden I've built a great $10 to $20 million business. I think that's possible. I think the interesting thing about venture scale businesses is there's two reasons something is venture backable. One is that it has $1 billion plus outcome, or maybe 10 billion now based on valuations, et cetera. And the other is a need for capital. And I think both of those things are changing. Like the need for capital is lower and the outcomes are more variable. And when you have a high need for capital, that means only things that are $1 billion are worth building. And maybe with a lower need for capital, lots of $100 million things are still awesome outcomes.
Yeah. No, I think that position is well stated. I generally agree with both of you on that as well. Let's go back to the architecture because we got like genius expert Kip on the call here. So you said you've seen this play before, right? Because the other thing that's interesting about that architecture is that every year that goes by, there's more that pop out the bottom with churn. And there's another new class that comes up at the top. For people that get stuck in the middle, so there's the flat out, I get funding, I'm going at it, I'm, let's say, 4 or 5 years into it, and I just get stuck in the muck. I'm stuck in the middle. What happens to those people?
What happens is Vista buys them.
Yeah.
The bad ones go out of business. The mid to upper tier Vista or some type of private equity shop buys them. And then a few on the edges might get bought by the platforms and incumbents. But M&A is pretty quiet these days in our world. And so that's what happens. The rare few might reinvent themselves, right? And actually pull off a pivot, especially if it's timed with something like artificial intelligence, right? I could actually just do something better and very different than what I'm doing, and I should actually go and try to execute on that.
Yeah. Was there a company in recent memory in that space that you're like, oh, geez, wow, they did a really nice job?
Yeah. You know what? The companies I really admire are the companies that have figured out how to build a good and sustainable business. Right. I don't know. I know Brian knows Chris and the Wistia guy as well. Yep. Right. It's
he was on the podcast.
Chris bought a bunch of his equity back and is running a very profitable, sustainable software business in an important niche. And it's probably the model of a lot of technology companies of the future, where it's not going to be this big venture exit, but man, everybody involved is going to do interesting work, be pretty happy, and make some real money doing it. Yeah. And I think that's all you can really ask for at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I will say the first time I heard of Klaviyo, I was like, you're kidding me? Another one of these? Yeah. That was my response. And I was wrong, like full out, totally wrong. Like they rode the e-commerce piece of the wave like really well, understood a market change that allowed for a player that looks on its face like a lot of other things. It's another email automation marketing tool to grow. And drove to a really great outcome. And honestly, sometimes it's just like competition doesn't matter, execution does.
I actually think picking the right market matters a lot. Yeah. Like folks don't remember that David Cancel brought Andrew over to HubSpot when we bought Performable. And then Andrew leaves in short order to go start Klaviyo.
I didn't know that.
Dave stays around for his earnout and everything. And then they go start Drift. And I think you would have said with 28 months or whatever the difference between, you're like, David is an amazing product leader. I'm going to bet on David. Drift still goes on to be a successful business.
Yeah.
But Andrew ends up with a much bigger outcome, not because he started earlier, not because I think he's any better at anything other than David. It's just like he rode the Shopify wave and timed this market really well and had a thesis on the market. And it was, in some ways, boring, right? A lot of what he was doing was a known problem for a given market, and maybe a lot of other people wouldn't have been interested in doing that, and it paid off really well.
I think what's cool about it is, and this is the advice I would give people in this like MarTech space, because it is, all the opportunities are pretty competitive. That's the takeaway from the thing, is like in every piece, every sub box, there's 20 companies, maybe 50 or more, is maybe the example that lesson from Klaviyo is, what's the why now question still matters. Like, why now? Well, why is now the right time to build another email marketing company? Because Shopify is the future of non-Amazon e-commerce, and you ride waves, don't make waves, right? Yeah. And they rode that wave really well.
You also have to get the favor of fortune in your favor, right? Where it's, they pick a fight with MailChimp.
Yeah.
Like most people forget this about the e-commerce kind of marketing market. They pick this fight with MailChimp. MailChimp picks this fight with Shopify. Shopify basically sides with Klaviyo. That, combining with some scale and growth problems for MailChimp, forces MailChimp to go a little sideways and have to go to Intuit and get bought by Intuit. And then leaves this market not wide open, but pretty open for this company, Klaviyo, to go and take on. And it's, you don't know that's going to happen, right? MailChimp was a very well-run, very successful business. You have to get lucky sometimes too.
Can you say more about the fight they picked? Because I wasn't watching the play-by.
I don't know this story.
Hey, so if you're a dork and you're close to all this stuff, there was a lot of controversy around, Shopify was doing some of its own email tools. Then there was some marketplace access. And I think MailChimp wanted to be an exclusive provider or wasn't happy with Klaviyo and other people getting real distribution into the marketplace. And I don't know exactly what happened, but got on the wrong foot. Like they had turned into a combative situation. And then so Shopify really leaned into Klaviyo as the default email provider on that for their merchants. And that is a huge tailwind. Like, that is a massive boost to your business. And those are very unpredictable things.
Yeah. That's where you need to hire the astrologist to figure out. Yeah. I need a full-time astrologist as my...
As podcast pundits, I'm available for astrology hiring.
It's pretty adjacent, podcast pundits and astrology. I agree with that.
That's true. I'll just ping both of you from time to time.
So, Kim, these market maps have lots and lots of company logos, but they also have boxes that sort of like group things together. Are there boxes that are emerging, new boxes on those maps that you are interested in, excited about as a buyer or as a user that you think that are, or as honestly, as a platform builder?
Yeah, there's lots of things for all of the reasons you just say, but I'll just stick to a general bucket of interest, especially as a marketer, because I'm interested in technology. And I subscribe to, we're in this third generation of the internet, and the best new companies, the best use cases are going to be new ones. They're not going to be reinventions of the old stuff. And so I'm looking for new use cases that weren't before possible. I was fortunate. I spent a lot over Heijin customers. And so for folks who don't know what Heijin is, like a AI video tool. And I was fortunate to spend a little bit of time with Josh, who is the founder of Heijin. And he's like, my job is to replace the camera. I don't think a camera should exist. You shouldn't need to have a camera, know how to use a camera to make a great video. And that's his thesis. And I was like, yeah, that's actually, that makes sense. I buy it. And you're trying, he's, I want to give you the best MP4 possible. And I was like, as a marketer, as somebody who makes a lot of video, I was like, I was really interested in this. And so there are a few different things you can do with AI video. One is you can have an avatar and just make text to video come to life. The other, like the most immediate use case, because the text to video is good, but it's still probably 75 to 80% of the way there. It's really good for internal use cases, maybe some conversion rate of some niche landing pages, some things like that. But you're not going to be fully mass market ready for that at this point. I think maybe by the end of this year, we might be there. One of the other things you could do is you can dub any video in another language with that person's original voice and everything. And the famous video of the Argentinian prime minister's speech from a couple months ago went viral because it got dubbed on Heijin. And so we did an experiment. We were like, I wonder what happens if you dub a video with Heijin and AI versus using local talent, like a local language script, kind of the old way of doing it, like the manual way of doing it, right?
Is this for an educational video?
YouTube.
We
started with
video?
YouTube.
For YouTube.
Like,
okay.
So if you're talking video, you're talking A-roll and B-roll. So A-roll with kind of a talking head on the screen, B-roll with kind of landscape or graphics or what have you. And so these are A-roll focused videos. And so there you got the folks on screen. And A-roll bugs videos in Spanish. So we want to go from English to Spanish.
And just like what kinds of YouTube videos? I'm just curious, just like what is HubSpot using YouTube for?
We have a bunch of YouTube videos, but I think these particular were tutorial videos of how to do different marketing best practices. Nothing crazy. The type of
nuts
video
and bolts, most HubSpot inbound content
businesses would have out there. And we did five each way to test initially. And what we found is that if you use AI dubbing, you still have to do a little bit. You've got to edit the bumpers in. You got to do some basic editing and everything. You got to do a little QA checking. Took us 2 days to go from one version to the other. Cost us basically $1,000, but it's largely for the QA and the lightweight editing. The old way takes about 10 days because you reshoot the video, you rewrite the script, you have a local speaker go and read all of that. And it costs about five times as much, like $5,000 or something, I think. And we're like, cool, let's see what people like better. The engagement and view rate is exactly the same. The conversion rate, the CVR, the monetization rate on those AI dub videos wasn't quite as good. But I never really worry about that because I always feel like I can make conversion rate better.
You can make five times the number of videos.
Well, exactly. And
I think that's the cost piece isn't the interesting piece in this to me.
It's the time.
It's the clock speed.
It's the clock speed of it is huge. And so we're just basically like, cool, all right, well, I guess we're going to dub hundreds and hundreds of videos, and let's go. And YouTube, this also comes at a time when YouTube is going to make channels multilingual. So you used to have separate channels for each language, and now you're just going to be able to have a master channel and have different languages.
So if I subscribe to HubSpot, I just get them in Spanish.
You can say, I want to subscribe to the Espanol version, the English version, the Dutch version, whatever version you might want to do.
Got it.
And that's pretty powerful. And the AI video space, is, for a whole host of reasons, is very interesting. And that is an example we've learned recently.
I want to jump on that clock speed thing for a second. We had Adam Nash on the program last
week. Oh, Adam's awesome.
Adam's great. And one of the blog posts we talked about a little bit is talking about the reason like rabbits reproduce really quickly is actually because they do it frequently, not because they have large litters. It's an analogy to virality, blah, blah, blah. But I think this idea of clock speed is really important in product development. The difference between, you brought up this conversion rate thing. Let's say any conversion rate can be optimized by improving the quality of a video. And that requires multiple iterations. It's undiscoverable on first shot. It is impossible to get the video right on the first shot, no matter how long you take. You spend 100 days on it or 10 days, there is some improvement. If you can only improve it once every 100 days, you will only get, and it takes 50 iterations to get to a local maxima, you'll never get there. But at 2 days, you do. And it's interesting because we look at AI tools a lot as being cost drivers.
It's the wrong,
right?
Yeah, it's the wrong way to look at it.
Saving the $4,000 is nothing compared to saving 80% of the time, iteration time, which because that means with the same cost, I can take 5 shots on goal. That's super interesting. Like that to me is the real unlock. And like why I think some of these tools are dramatically mispriced.
Dramatically mispriced.
I think they're dramatically mispriced because they're selling time savings, and time savings can be put on a napkin as like having a dollar value. And I think if they were priced against business results or clock time or iteration speed, I think that they are worth much more, if that makes sense. Right now, the most you'll pay for it, if you think of it as a dollar savings, is $8,000. Or sorry, usually 10% of $8,000, I think Adam said, is like you create N dollars of value, you can capture 10%. But the real value is all of the business that you can drive with those YouTube videos because you're able to iterate and improve on them. And I think that this is where I'm like, we're not selling the right thing yet.
Look, pricing and like you all could probably do like a month's worth of shows on pricing and packaging in an emerging AI market. So that's a whole other thing.
Okay. So yesterday, 2 days ago, there was this sort of viral video, an Instagram ad, the classic Instagram person talking to the camera about some kind of product. I think it was like a skincare product or something. And the pitch was that it was created fully AI. Now, I think some people thought it was an AI avatar. As far as some people did some digging, it's a Fiverr source recording, like someone who recorded themselves talking, and then it's synced and dubbed to be this AI thing. And it made me think that the reason these landscapes have lots of boxes in them is because that same technology, but pitched as build the highest conversion rate testimonial ads you can possibly build in the world and improve your business outcomes is an equally sellable product. And there's someone doing that. It costs $100. So I didn't play with it. 100 euros.
Yeah, it's like a Hagen wrapper or something, right?
It's a Hagen wrapper.
I paid the 100 euros. I made a video in 15 minutes. It was 80% the way there. There's some weird hand stuff. There's some weird speech gap stuff. But
things fingers or something. Yeah.
And I've been pushing this idea that a lot of great AI tools, and this is why I talked about the pricing thing, will like solve full stack jobs to be done. And so there's a version of HeyGen, that's HeyGen, which I think is a huge vision, could be massive, right? But there's also another version that's don't make testimonial videos. That's not the company. The company is we generate the ads, run the ads, measure the ads, iterate on the ads, and drive results for you. We are your video agency, AI powered, that I think I would like to see more of, which is just not just the little piece of the AI generated video, but what's all the workflow around it that, Kip, you could hire that company to do 80% of your HubSpot spend on video ads.
Totally.
That would be cool.
There are a couple things there. There's one, it's like, cool, well, I just spent a ton of money for this high-cost creative that is perfect, but now I could use this AI company to give me a million different versions of it for every prospect I want to engage with, and that's pretty amazing. The other part of this that we haven't really talked a lot about is a lot of this is actually moving money from the services economy to the software economy, right? Marketing and sales, we have a huge set of solutions partners. There's just an amazing set of agencies out there. And if you talk to those people right now, they're like, I don't quite understand where the work is going to live. What work is going to be the services work versus the software work? I think that kind of spread is up in the air. And that's part of why I think you're seeing that market map grow, is because some of these companies are trying to see if they can move money from the services side of the economy. Yeah. For every dollar somebody spends on HubSpot, they spend another $5 on services.
Oh, yeah. Really? The services, like the services TAM is way bigger than the current software TAM if we look at the last decade, which is really interesting. But it's the spread between, and back to the earlier conversation, that's what does create a bunch of the anxiety, because that services part of it is where we by and large make our livelihoods.
Yeah.
And so any other learnings back on the HN thing?
I just think the applications of AI video are very immense. You're talking about translation. You're talking about conversion rate of websites, landing pages, and email. You're talking about prospecting emails and iMessages and WhatsApp messages. I think the applicability of that particular category, regardless of who wins, what the end execution looks like, is immense. And I imagine you'll have specialized models for some of those different use cases, like Fareed kind of outline, whether it be increasing conversion rate, customer testimonials, all of those things. But it feels like we are just getting started. And if you're a marketer paying attention, you got some real leverage in conversion rates over the next year or two before it gets mass adoption.
It's interesting you say this, because in the last week, I've gotten two marketing emails that claim to be personalized to me. They were a person who is telling Joff what to buy, essentially. And you're like, well, that stuff was just not scalable. So it's like it brings scale to something where...
So we're starting to do that. So we're using GPT-4 to write one-to-one email copy and then basically match content recommendations in the vector database. I think we're using Pinecone to drop those in. And the conversion rate of emails where the copy is really for that business specific and it has a much better guess about what that person's next best action is are drastically better. Like the line I use on this is, anytime we've run an experiment with AI that's worked, the improvement has not been little, it's been big, right? You're not seeing 1 or 2, 5% improvement.
Yeah.
The AI email is like, it converts like 82% better than the old way of doing
it.
So it's like the gains are not small. The gains are big. Now you might try something and it just completely doesn't work or the tech's not ready for it. But if you can land the tech is ready for this use case and you can execute it well, the gains are very high.
It's amazing, because in the late 90s, that was like when the internet was really emerging commercially, that was the this personalized, you're going to have personalized marketing, it's going to come at you, and it's taken decades to actually reach a point where it can be done in a more scalable way. Those are phenomenal uplifts, though. That's great.
Yeah, we're still early days, but I would generally say when something works, it works in a very meaningful way.
Yeah so it's not that the hit rate is higher or on an experiment, or and I'm sure many are worse because people are like, this sounds like it was made by a robot, but that the things that win big, which is honestly the holy grail of growth and marketing.
Yeah, marketing is, look, I'm just a venture capitalist disguised as a marketer. I'm trying to get asymmetric returns on a few things and not to make a complete jerk and ass out of myself on everything else. And that's the name of the game.
Overall, that's fantastic.
So, we had Casey Winters on a couple of weeks ago, and we had a conversation about, is consumer AI a real wave? Will it be a big deal? And one of the takes that we had on that episode was, there are a lot of awesome new use cases, but the challenge of growth, that every big consumer wave has been coupled with some unlocking of some new low-cost acquisition strategy, be it Facebook ads or SE or virality and messaging type stuff, et cetera. And that second piece of the puzzle hasn't quite yet emerged. And just the dot I'm connecting here is, maybe the channel is hyper-personalized, really well-executed personalized advertising strategies or outreach strategies not necessarily for consumer. Maybe that's more on the B2B side, but that actually is, it's not a new channel. It's a new approach to the channel that has outsized returns, may not last forever once it's flooded. But if you are early there, there might be some really big, like one idea I'm having as you talk about this is like Reels and TikTok. The cool thing is that I don't have to show the same ad to everybody. I could make lots of them. And the algorithm's pretty good at finding the one I care about. And so maybe I could make hundreds of versions with hundreds of different people with hundreds of different testimonials on my CPG product, let's say, and be able to like get not higher reach, but dramatically higher conversion rates or something like that. So that's that. Maybe there are some growth secrets hiding in plain sight here.
Well, yeah. So I've spent a lot of time thinking about this. It's one of my guests perhaps have more time thinking about this than most humans. This is my pitch for both of you. You can tell me if you buy it or not. It turns out that the fall of 2022 was a very important time. Okay. Heijin launched in September, Canva text to image October, ChatGPT November, Levin Labs January. I think Runway was in there. A lot of these foundational, like the true shift to AI, you really want to talk about it, started Q3 2022. If you look back to the first version of Web 2, you had Blogger in 99, you had Twitter in 06, you had Facebook 3 or 02.
What? Later than that. Something like, yeah,
something
six,
around there, right?
Five. And I learned that Mark Zuckerberg is 40 years old. That blew my mind. So
if you look at all that, what you would say is we're going to have new distribution channels. They're just going to take some time. And they are not here yet. In interim period, the leverage is going to be in conversion rates. So for some period of time, you're going to be able to have much better conversion rates. And then this technology adoption curve is going to get deep enough and steep enough and to enough people that some new methods of distribution will exist and we will take advantage of those. But it took 5 to 8 years in Web 2 to really get there. And so maybe it takes half that time. So we're still like a year or two away. And so I went into this year being like, it's going to be really hard for me to get a lot more traffic. It's going to be much easier for me to convert the traffic I get at a much higher rate.
I want to step back for a second and maybe challenge this distribution thing that it's necessary to begin with, because you can look at, there's always these great graphs showing you how long it took a piece of technology to get adopted. You look at something like the phone, it takes long kind of time to get there. Electricity, a long time to actually get to a full penetration. Let's call it like US households, many decades. And then you look at the thing that's taken the shortest amount of time after the internet is something like ChatGPT to get up to 100 million. So that signals to me that like distribution's kind of trending down to zero marginal cost to distribute something. Now, those channels have become very noisy and more crowded and things like that. But why do we need another one for this thing to be explosive?
It's a fair point. I completely disagree, though, because it's one of those things where it's true that if you are a generational product, that you could get adopted much faster. If you are the average product, there is more competition and distribution has never been harder. It's just so important. Distribution is the most underrated thing in this world and people do not obsess about it enough.
I totally agree that distribution is incredibly important. I guess I'm trying to figure out what we're solving for, because it sounded like
arbitrage. You're solving for the spread of cost to return, and that spread is real tight right now. And when you get new channels, the spread's really wide, and you need new channels to make the economics of distribution work at scale, especially for high risk businesses.
Yeah, Joff, I think you're right. That amazing products, because of the dynamics of the internet and the speed of information, do actually grow incredibly quickly, right? Because if you think about why would someone tell someone else about a product? It's when the gap between their expectations for the product and the delivery of the product are really wide. And ChatGPT, more than any other product in our lifetimes, probably, I would say Uber blew my mind when I first saw it, but nothing has been like, holy crap, you have to see this type product than ChatGPT. And to its credit, grew to 100 million plus consumers or whatever their numbers are, with no distribution whatsoever. You couldn't even share a chat.
I know.
Out of ChatGPT. You had to take a screenshot and post it to Twitter. And so I do think that if you build 100x product, you're right. That the adoption, because people have the mechanism to talk to others instantaneous and at broad scale through one-to-many channels like Twitter, yeah, but also through like text messages, et cetera, can grow very fast. I think what Kip is saying is, yeah, but if you're one of the 12 MarTech tools that sit in this box that are all fighting for the same customers,
it's way harder.
There are limited distribution advantages available because of the amount of money and time in this.
Okay, let me tell you what's going through my
mind. Please.
Kip was talking. So over the course of several decades, because you went through the chronology of like more distribution channels, I'm just thinking, let's just call them highways. Between San Francisco and Santa Barbara, over the last couple of decades, there have been multiple new highways. There was an internet highway, there was an email highway, there was Facebook social highway, these things that are driving the cost of distribution down to zero. And like you're saying, like, would I want more highways? If my goal is to try to get as much traffic going back and forth, I'm like, hell yeah, sure, give me more highways. I don't know if those are necessary for AI to go through its paradigm shift. It winds up that a lot of these technology shifts were associated with new highways of moving the distribution back and forth. They were correlated or connected, and that's awesome. But I heard us saying, or someone saying, hey, in order for AI to be successful, you need another highway. And I'm like, why? Would I want one? Heck yeah. Do I need one? I don't know. If I don't get one, what happens? It's to Kip's point. I think what happens is, man, when I was growing up, there was like three TV channels and like the ads, all the kids in the world know what those ads were because there was so little traffic going back and forth. And now you're saying like, look, there's congestion on the highways. And I'm like, yeah. So any single person is going to have a harder time like getting their message out. I'm like, yeah. Do I need it for the AI world to emerge? No.
So there's a couple points. People are getting out of the cars and walking on the highways. And yeah, normally when the traffic's that bad, they vote for some more roads and they raise taxes and they build some more roads. Yeah. So that's job one. Two, when you have new paradigms, you require new highways. And yeah, like the biggest highway we don't talk about is the Apple ecosystem, right? ChatGPT is really went that fast because of the internet and then the Apple ecosystem, right?
Yes.
And it is plausible that Sam or somebody's going to build a really cool, different phone device and a whole different ecosystem that is going to allow for a whole major superhighway of new products that would not be possible to be distributed without that happening. And I think that is the most likely outcome here, is that you definitely are going to need at least some new highways to distribute the things that exist in a new paradigm.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense to me. And I agree, particularly the point that resonates is this ecosystem of apps feels like it's missing. And more I've been looking at like the agent-based economy, right? There's a world in which, because today LLMs are very multi-step, very singular in step, right? Like I can't give it complicated. Like I need to go over here, grab some information, then go over there, fill it out, and then come back and return to me like an answer and update my calendar. Correct. It's like that multi-step thing, one could imagine like a multi-agent thing. And in that world, there being an app-like ecosystem where there's an orchestration layer that allows these disparate pieces of, and they go by different names, but agent-like based things. And there's lots of people that are making different kinds of bets. Adept is a bet at that. I would say Rabbit, if you've seen that. It's a new piece of hardware, but the hardware might be a bit of a head fake because it's a large action model behind it, which is trying to coordinate like these agents. So
I'm waiting patiently for mine to show up in the mail. I have no idea.
I do too. I just get that thing. Hey, it's coming soon. But I see what you're saying. That makes sense to me. Kip, well argued. Nice.
I love arguing.
That's great. Cool.
We love arguing on this show because it's the whole point is to try to bring these debates out into the public. All right. Wow. That was a pretty fun discussion and it surprised me a little bit about where we headed with it. I want to just use a moment here to recap a few of the points that I thought were really interesting from Kip and Joff, especially in this last bit in our deep dive on HeyGen. The first is the benefit of some of these AI tools isn't just cost. A lot of people talk about how it creates efficiency and drives down costs, but that the change in clock speed, your speed of iteration, your ability to get things done instead of in 10 days, but instead with 2 days, makes a huge difference in your ability to iterate quickly and actually get to the business results that you're looking for from these things. I think number two that comes from that is, as a result of that, when you're using AI in your tools, when those experiments work in marketing, they tend to work big. They tend to hit big. The hits hit big. And that's a big difference. Again, the clock speed helps you get to these experiments more quickly. And some of these can be not just small wins, but massive wins, as Kip has described. And the last is a question about distribution. We went back to our conversation about distribution and whether AI unlocks new channels and new highways for people to be able to grow their products, or whether this improvement in conversion rate is the main lever that AI unlocks. So I think those points were all awesome. Kudos to the team at HeyGen for building a great product that was fun to talk about. And thanks, Joff and Kip, for being here with us today.
Nice recap, Reid. Awesome name, Kip.